Dr. Hill Explains, where I invite you to join the science teaching conversation with me about...
New Scientist, 4th of August 2018, the third reading as I'm going through, just practicing reading so I can get more in touch. This is an article by Sarah Leach, Starlight Stretched by a Black Hole. There's a very entertaining photograph of a black hole and a light, a star coming in, and it its colour changes from blue to a red. It's, it appears to cool down as it goes near a black hole, because blue things are hotter and red things are cooler in black body radiation, and stars are a black body radiator. The byline for the picture is Albert Einstein's predicted that stars would turn red near black holes. A star hurtling towards the supermassive black hole at the centre of the Milky Way has helped astronomers test Albert Einstein's theory of general relativity, showing that it holds up even under some of the most extreme conditions found within our galaxy. For a long time, astronomers at the European Southern Observatory in Germany have... it's actually physically located in Germany, because it would be a northern observatory. Okay, have had their equipment trained on the star very near Sagittarius A asterisk. That's the black hole in the center. Oh, sorry, it says the super massive black hole at the center of our galaxy. The star called S2 passes less than 20 million kilometers from a black hole. Okay, and so we, in terms of our distance from the sun, we're 153 million kilometers from the sun, and the sun is 1.3 million kilometers wide. Just to give you some ideas. Quote, the galactic center is an ideal laboratory, says Tim Richard Grenzel of the Max Planck Institute of Extraterrestrial Physics in Germany. This is because the extreme gravity creates the perfect opportunity to see the effects of general relativity that can't, that don't exist in other places. Tim spent 10 years observing S2 before it made a close approach to the black hole in 2002, but the telescopes available at the time limited to what they could learn from it. They knew the star would pass just as close 16 years later in May 2018 and started planning an upgrade. In the end, they used telescopes in Chile to give them the equivalent of a 120-meter diameter telescope powerful enough to see an object on the moon just a centimeter across. So this is, you get several telescopes together and then you do coherence matching. You get the actual light signal in so intensely, it's the actual, each photon goes in and you can actually reconstruct it as if you've got an effect, 120 meter mirror, which, just to give you an idea how much is 120 meters, that's the width of a soccer pitch, or the length of or so much, 120 meters is longer than a big soccer oval. So just to give you an idea. When the team observed the star passing close to the black hole again, they were able to carefully measure the light and found that it changed its colour as it moved. This alone would be wouldn't be too exciting. Objects often change colour in space through something known as a Doppler effect. Anything moving towards an observer has its light waves switched together, making them shorter and bluer. Objects moving away, however, have their lights stretched a bit longer with redder wavelengths. The light is stretched, the actual oscillator is changing in time. But in the case, the team found the gravitational pull of the black hole was responsible. Its gravitational redshift occurs when the waves of the light from the object are stretched by gravity of another, or compressed in this case, or stretched. The gravitational redshift is a core element of general relativity, says Ozell of Arizona State University. Quote, it has been previously measured for the sun, nearby stars and white dwarfs, but on the first time we see it on an object so far away in the galaxy and one that's orbiting a black hole. In this case, the redshift was exactly as predicted by general relativity. However, the researchers point out that it doesn't mean relativity is absolutely correct. Quote, we know Einstein's theory must break down at very small scales and extreme conditions around the universe, says Grinzel. This next thing, 5 minutes in, is by Alice Klein. It's called Endometriosis, a drug approved in the US. A pill for treating endometriosis-related pain will be soon available in the US after being approved by the US Food and Drug Administration. Endometriosis occurs when tissue from the uterus spreads to other parts of the body. Ah, yes, I remember about 10 or 15% of women. Usually within the pelvis, it can cause severe pelvic pain during menstruation and sex, or all the time, and affects 1 in 10 women before they reach menopause. Endometriosis-related pain is normally managed by painkillers, contraceptives that shorten or suppress menstruation, or injectable hormone treatments. For many women with the condition, these treatments either don't work, trigger side effects like weight gain or mood swings, or can only be taken for short periods due to the effect on bone density. The newly approved drug called Eloxcus can be taken for longer but still has side effects. In a placebo-controlled clinical trial of over almost 900 women with moderate severe endometriosis pain, Eloxcus reduced menstrual pain in over 40% of the women, and non-menstruating pelvic pain in over 50% when taken once daily pill. Participants also reported lower than average pain during sex. The drug works by reducing oestrogen, the hormone that drives endometriosis. Because it only lowers oestrogen slightly, it can be taken for up to 2 years. In contrast, the more powerful injectable hormone treatments can only be taken 6 months because they cause bone loss. The trial found that Eloxcus was associated with several side effects, including hot flushes, headaches in about 20% of women, and nausea in about 10%. Any extra options for treating endometriosis are welcome, says Elizabeth Farrell of the Women's Health Organization, Jean Halls in Australia. However, the cost of $845 per month, Eloxcus is unlikely to be a first-line treatment, she says. This article is in brief, and these articles have no authors associated with it. So these are shorter articles, and we're 7 minutes in. Water, water everywhere, but just a drop of wilderness left. The ocean is barely wild anymore. A map of the ocean's wilderness shows that only 13% of the global waters remain undisturbed by human activities. Kendall Jones of the University of Queensland, Australia, and his colleagues analysed the effects of 19 human stresses on the sea, which fall into four broad categories: fishing, pollution, climate change, and shipping. Transporting vast quantities of goods across the oceans can disturb habitats, pollute the waters, and move invasive species around. Pollution doesn't include physical contaminants. Light pollution is included too, because it can affect the coastal habitats. Of the 16 ocean realms the team studied, the surface waters with the largest portion of wilderness left are parts of the Southern Ocean, closer to Antarctica, which are just 88.5% wilderness. Arctic waters are also less disruptive than other seas, although both may soon change if the loss of sea ice decreases, says Jones. In temperate areas of the Arctic, between Europe and North America, and between Africa and South America, wilderness is entirely gone, with less than 0.5% of the waters undisturbed. 2/3 of all the ocean wildernesses in international waters. And of that left in coastal areas and open seas, Jones found that less than 5% is protected. Graphene's latest trick fixing itself. Often hailed as a miracle material, graphene, an atom-thick layer of carbon, now comes a self-healing version. Hongwei Zhu at Tangier University in China and his colleagues have made graphene gel that is tough and rigid when it's dry, but squishy and stretchy, self-healing when it's wet. They mixed graphene sheets with water, then added polyacrylic acid, which has a good water absorbing properties, and then calcium carbonate. The result is a stable gel. It dries into a hard, like plastic-like substance strengthened by graphene, and can be formed into a solid shape, a thin film or a foam, all with the potential applications. Zhu says, when the team cut a piece in half and placed the halves back together, they fused easily. Eventually, Sue says, it could be used to make a robot that can heal itself. So it's graphene is not actually, it doesn't heal itself. Woe of half male, half female cricket. An extremely rare cricket with female sex organs but male wings is giving biologists insight into sexual behaviour. Grandomorphous are creatures that possess both male and female characteristics. Kazuto Tanaka and Mahi Jun of Women's University at Sendai, Japan, and his team caught the unusual lawn ground cricket. East of Tokyo, they found it had wings like those of a male and egg-laying organs of a female. The researchers wanted to see whether it behaved more like a male or a female. Male crickets make chirps with their wings to attract receptive females during sex to repel other males. Now you understand what's going on. But Tanaka says the laboratory containers the glandomorphs tried to chirp but couldn't make a sound. It still tried to serenade females put in the container, but they didn't let it get too close. Male crickets seemed to take a liking to grandomorphs, and one even tried to deposit a sperm package. But grandomorphs tried to chirp aggressively at the males and bit one. Tanaka says such organisms offered opportunities to study molecular mechanisms of sex determination or sex behaviour. Bit of a weird story. I can't see how they survive. Mouths primed to heal wounds fast. It's true. Wounds in the mouth really do mend much faster than cuts to the skin. A study has found that cells in the mouth are always primed for healing. As a result, could hint at ways to improve wound healing elsewhere. Jay Silvico of the University of California, San Diego, and his team made small wounds in the mouths and on the upper arms of 30 volunteers. That would be fun. Neural damage healed about 5 to 10 times faster. Biopsies revealed networks of healing genes are permanently active or on standby cells in the mouth lining, but not in skin cells. When a team altered the mice to activate these networks of skin, external wounds healed faster. Okay. Sex maggots cicadas are on drugs. The castration and then involuntary stimulated chemsex. That's the fate that awaits cicadas infected by the Muscopa fungus, according to researchers who discovered the psychoactive compounds in fungal growths of stricken insects. Massapora infections in cicadas are associated with hypersexual activities, including cases in which, for example, males suddenly attempt to mate with other males. This appears to spread the fungus. But the fungus makes these forays a miserable venture. When infected, cicadas first try to mate. The end of the abdomens, including their genitalia, are pulled off. This abnormal mass is replaced by a large fungal plug. What? When infected, first try to mate, the abdomens, their genitalia fall off. This is replaced by a large fungal plug. A white part of the cicada in the image below. Okay. Matt Katzen of West Virginia University and his colleague looked at 56 plugs and found about half of them contained either amphetamine or psilocybin or psilocybin, an active ingredient of magic mushrooms. It isn't clear what exactly the function of these chemicals play, but it is possible that they help improve the insect's endurance as they embark on fungus-fueled sex, says Felissa DeBecker at the University of Central Florida. She and her colleagues have shown the Orphelocephalus fungus infections in ants create LSD-like compounds. That's an interesting story. Entrepreneurial spirit more likely if you have a cat parasite. Students in the US have a type of brain parasite carried by cats are more likely to be majoring in business studies. The pets are host of a protozoan parasite, Toxoplasma gondii. Oh, okay, that's understand what that parasite. I'll have to look into that one. It can infect people through contact with cat feces, contaminated water, or poorly cooked meat from infected livestock. As many as one third of the world's population may have it. Parasites don't usually make us feel sick. This is interesting. It may explain some behaviours I'm seeing. But it forms a cyst in the brain where it can remain in the rest of the person's life. Some studies have linked infection with slow reaction times, bipolar disorder, schizophrenia, suicidal behaviour, and explosive anger. Now, another of almost 1,300 US students have found that those who have been exposed to the parasites were 1.7 times more likely to be doing a business major. In particular, they are more likely to be focusing on management and entrepreneurship than in other business-related areas. The study also found that professionals attending business events were more than twice as likely to have started their own business if they were T. gondii positive, and that countries with higher prevalence of infection show more entrepreneurial activity. The team behind the study say the results suggest that the parasite may have been involved in reducing the person's fear of failure and higher risk and higher reward adventures. Rodents infected with T. gondii are known to become less fearful of encountering cats. Big question, that theory. I think that's sort of like, strange, but, you know. Blockchain can tell if cannabis is legit. If software behind the Bitcoin cryptocurrency has found an unlikely use, spotting counterfeit drugs, using edible barcodes and blockchain, True Drug Technologies in Hawaii believes it can track cannabis sold legally in the US. The firm tags cannabis edibles, such as brownies and lollipops, with silica particles described as edible barcodes. The idea is the barcodes are very difficult to imitate and can be scanned to reveal if the product is legitimate. Similar tags have been used for the medication since 2016. The tags are created by etching thin silicon wafer with a pattern of tiny holes. The wafer is ground into microscopic particles and retain the code, and these are attached to the surface of cannabis. Anyone can read the codes with a handheld scanner to check them online. Oh my god, this is amazing. The online portion of the system is a blockchain-based database developed by Take It Tech, based in Seattle. Blockchain is a form of digital ledger originally developed for cryptocurrencies and can be publicly recorded information in a way that is difficult to tamper with. I don't quite fully understand the full blockchain aspect of it. I don't know. Ever felt a third arm might be handy? We're 18 minutes in. Eight people have reliably used mind-controlled robotic arm at the same time as their own arms, letting them do two things at once. What I have to say is that it's obviously used not at the same time. I mean, it means eight separate people have done. Participants in the experiment had to learn to control a robotic arm using a machine that interfaced with electrodes on their head to capture brain activity. The arm was calibrated to pick up the differences of the brain patterns when the participants imagined grasping and releasing a bottle. To test the skills, volunteers had to perform tasks simultaneously, hold and release a bottle using robotic arms and use their real arms to move a ball around a tray. A team of advanced telecommunication research at the International in Kyoto, Japan, found that 8 out of the 15 participants could reliably roll a target ball to points in a tray while grasping and releasing the bottle with the robotic arm, but the rest were only successful about half the time. Robotic arms, this could be useful for people who work on factories, for example, helping them to lift extra objects or just providing extra hand when needed. That's pretty interesting. So, the question is, if I've got this, is this an aid? It's okay, so if you don't have an arm, but if you do have an arm, using this aid is going to knock you down. Okay, so Surviving the Heat, an article, feature article by Michael LePage. Badly designed homes can make heat waves worse. Temperatures had been soaring much in the Northern Hemisphere recently. In southern parts of the UK, they have been pushing to exceed 30 degrees for weeks, and health warnings about the heat waves have been flying. Of course, obviously, 30 degrees is just a normal day down here in Sydney. It's attracted some derision from those living in hotter places, such as the city of Darwin in Australia. In Darwin, that's what we call winter. And it was one mocking response. Yes, it gets much hotter elsewhere, but hot places are geared up to cope with the heat. By contrast, the temperatures soar in normal, cooler cities like London. People commute on crowded trains that breach the temperature limits for transporting livestock, work in buildings with limited cooling systems, and struggle to sleep in stuffy houses designed for cold winters. Hot summers will soon be the norm. Temperature climbs because of climate change. So unless more is done to adapt buildings to transport systems to the heat summer, it's going to become ever more miserable for millions and even more deadly to young, ill and old people. Preventable deaths. Quote, without further action, the number of heat-related deaths could increase from 2,000 per year per day to 7,000 per day in the 2050s, said Caitlin Brown, head of the adaptation at the UK Committee for Climate Change. If a flood killed that many people, it would be a massive outcry, says Bob Ward, Graham Research Institute of Climate Change in the UK. Quote, it's a scandal that hundreds of people are dying, he says. Quote, many of those are preventable deaths. Hello, Mary. At a report published last week by the UK's Environmental Adults Committee, Audit Committee, says the problem is so serious that the country, that the, I think you can just go in, Mary.
Okay.
Yep, lovely. The government minister to tackle the issue, but what can be done? Countries like the UK are simply not doing enough to fix buildings that are poorly designed to stay cool in hot summers. Worse still, new buildings are being designed in such a way that they require vast amounts of energy to cool. It's more than just a matter of comfort. High temperatures reduce the productivity of workers that affect how well children learn, lowering exam scores and all potential lifelong impacts. Countries must do three things to protect their citizens' lives and livelihoods. First, existing infrastructure from homes, hospitals, schools, offices and trains need to be modified to cope with extremes expected as the planet warms up, including longer, hotter heat waves. Second, new buildings and transport systems need to be designed with future heat waves in mind. Third, cities as a whole need to be minimised the urban heat island effect that can boost local temperatures by several degrees. I wish they'd have heat island effect here. This is freezing at the moment. I'd say it's probably about 12 degrees here in the city. We can keep the buildings cool by actively removing excess heat, air conditioning. In other words, we can stop them getting too hot in the first place. Needless to say, prevention is better than cure. The problem with the air conditioning is that it produces yet more heat. A study in Paris concluded that air conditioning could warm the city by up as much as 2 degrees. It's also expensive to install and run because air conditioners use a lot of energy. In fact, 10% of the electricity globally is used to power air conditioners. There you go. And that is expected to soar. So 2% of the energy of our global energy is to make food, and 10% is to cool us down. There you go. More people can afford aircon, according to the recent International Energy Agency report. That is a huge problem because most electricity is generated from fossil fuels. In other words, the more air conditioning you use, the hotter the planet will come. The focus then should be on creating buildings that can stay warm in winter and cool in summer. Architects and planners don't seem to have realised this, says eco-designer Sue Roth, the co-author of the book Adapting Buildings and Cities to Climate Change. Quote, they just don't get it. That would be an interesting book to read. I wouldn't mind having that. Current architectural crazes are for lightweight glass buildings that would become unbearably hot without energy-intensive air conditioning systems. Rolf lives in an eco house with a much more sensible approach. The first step is to think about the shape of the building and the size of the permanent placement of windows in relation to the path of the sun. The best idea is to find ways to minimise the amount of sunshine entering the window in summer but maximise it in winter, such as through long roof eaves. See the diagram above. Okay, yeah, I can see that. Sorry, they show the eave casting a shadow, but in the at cooler months, the sun can pop underneath the eaves. Besides, good insulation to keep the heat out of the buildings, buildings should be slow to warm up. That means having a high thermal mass, such as thick walls made of dense materials, or sinking the building into the ground. It should also be possible to get good airflow through the house at night, for instance, by having windows that can be left wide open without compromising security. All this means that we should be building a relatively low-rise, cube-shaped buildings with thick walls and a few windows on the sunny side. That's pretty much the opposite of what's being done. Designer homes often feature wall-to-ceiling windows, and most new office buildings are all glass skyscrapers with no shading and sealed windows. Glass is very energy inefficient. It leaks heat in winter and soaks it up in summer. The bottom line is that people who live in a warming world should not build glass houses. It's a no-brainer, says Rolf. So why have we fallen into this glass trap? Partly because it's a matter of culture. Glass is fashionable, and most architects don't understand that building needs to be designed differently in a world facing catastrophic global warming. Although that is starting to change, Rolf says, much of the focus has been on energy efficiency. So if engineers design a cooling system for a building that requires less energy, it's hailed as green building. Few are trying to create buildings that don't need cooling systems in the first place. To tackle this, governments must introduce building standards that force designers to create truly green buildings. But nothing is being done in the UK, warns the Environmental Audit Committee. Quote, the government should recognise the importance of protecting public health by introducing building and regulations to stop new buildings overheating, as says the report. Can badly designed buildings be fixed? With skyscrapers, there's often little that can be done, but with smaller buildings and houses, there's often scope for making them cooler without resorting to air conditioning. The first thing is obviously to insulate them, but the UK has abandoned insulation schemes and the rates of its insulation has plummeted. The next thing is to stop 500 watts of heat per square metre you get when the sun shines through the window, says Ronald Ennis, the University of Hull, UK. Drawing the curtains can help a bit, but it's better to stop the sunshine getting in the first place. This can be done by installing external shutters, awnings or pergolas, or planting trees or climbers that shade the exterior. Authorities also need to look at the big picture. The urban heat island effect can warm cities like London by as much as extra 7 degrees, but measures like tree planting can drop the urban temperatures even degrees, reducing the need for cooling city-wide and making such places more pleasant. For buildings that do need cooling, there are greener alternatives to air conditioning. For instance, ground source heat pumps can warm buildings in winter and reverse in summer and cool them. But these systems are expensive and won't be affordable for everyone. We need to be doing all these things and more to adapt our homes and cities to the world of ever extreme weather. Introducing better standards for new buildings is especially urgent because these buildings could be around for centuries. If they are not fit for purpose, we will pay for the price. Or, as Rolf put it, quote, the government has to wake up and smell the coffins.
Another story comes to a close. It's been a pleasure sharing this moment in time with you. May you discover truly amazing things, understand them, and tell others. Thanks for listening.